Despite what our president says, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We are live in Las Vegas at the SHOT Show, Shooting, Hunting, Outdoors Trade Show. 1,100 vendors, 65,000 attendees. It's huge. It is, virtually any kind of representation of guns, ammunition, equipment for police, for some military, but mostly police, law enforcement, civilian. Gun stores come here to buy their inventories for the coming year. And sitting in front of me is John Lott from the Crime Prevention Research Center, who we talk to from time to time about these issues. He is, I would say, the most prominent economist in the United States who studies Second Amendment issues and, of course, the numbers behind the issues. John, it's good to see you in person for a change.
It's awesome to see you, Lars.
You came up here, you're almost out of breath because I take it they've got you running at SHOT Show these
days. Well, I couldn't be late for you.
Well, I appreciate you doing that. So tell me what's the state of our current situation today in the United States. So the president's still talking now and then about gun control, but the American public embracing the Second Amendment and gun ownership.
Well, I think there are lots of things to be optimistic about, but I think there are things to still be very concerned about. On the optimistic part, there's some interesting polls that have come out recently. Pew has a poll that indicates for the first time that they've been polling over the past 25 years or so, more people oppose more gun control by a significant margin than support it, 52% to 46%.
Yeah.
But what's more interesting is that when you kind of break down some of the other questions that Gallup and Pew have been asking, what you find is that why more people oppose gun control. And the main change has been that more people think it makes them safer to own a gun as opposed to riskier. If you go back to 2000, for example, Gallup found that only 35% of people thought that owning a gun in the home made them safer as opposed to increasing risks. In the recent poll that they just did at the end of last year, it was 63%.
And I guess what I find notable about that is we've had 20 or 30 years of the mainstream media saying over and over again, this is dangerous, it's bad to own a gun. In other words, the general tenor of most of the coverage, not Fox, where you show up from time to time, MSNBC and CNN and the New York Times and the Washington Post are all saying, oh, it's bad to own a gun, it puts you at greater risk, it doesn't really make you any safer. They've had this drumbeat for a couple of decades, and yet American public opinion has gone the opposite direction from the drumbeat.
Right. Well, I think it probably was going with the direction of the drumbeat, it looks like, until the late 90s.
Yeah.
And then it changed. And part of that may be Fox. I think people are beginning to hear somewhat more about defensive gun uses than they have in the past. I mean, just probably in the last couple of weeks, I've heard a couple defensive gun uses on Fox that got attention that wouldn't have gotten, and their website has some. And I agree. When I did the book, The Bias Against Guns, that came out in 2003, I looked at all the media coverage, all the news coverage on ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox. And except for Fox, at that time, I couldn't find one single news story about a defensive gun use during the entire year 2001. And only Fox, I could find one. And I think so. Even Fox, I think, has changed. But, you know, at least they can get it someplace. Plus, there's the internet. There are other people that are collecting these types of things. And I think also the fact that you have things like 12 million concealed carry permits now, that generates a lot more kind of dramatic defensive gun uses, though even some of those didn't get attention. There was a case from like 2 weeks ago in Kissimmee, Florida, where a pastor with a concealed handgun permit stopped somebody who was at his church trying to shoot it up. There are lots of people there. The minister was able to stop him immediately. But if that only got local coverage, but if the minister hadn't been there, I'm sure it would have gotten national coverage and would have been talked about for days afterwards.
I'm talking to John Lott, who's the author most recently of Dumbing Down the Courts, How Politics Has Kept the Smartest Judges Off the Bench. John, the thing I worry about is the dog that didn't bark, because having been in the news business a long time, we always did sidebar stories. If there was an earthquake, you would, you know, after the initial coverage, you'd say, and here are ways to protect yourselves against an earthquake. If there was a fire, it'd be fire. If there was, and yet we had these attacks in Paris, France, which in a workplace where you could imagine yourself in an American workplace and having these Islamic terrorists come in through the door. Almost none of the news organizations said, hey, by the way, there's this sidebar story. What if those people had been able to arm themselves instead of having a police officer at the front door who was the first guy shot by the terrorists?
No, exactly. Look, obviously, France and other countries haven't learned the lesson yet. France's response to the terrorist attack was to take 10,000 uniformed soldiers and put them in front of Jewish sites. Maybe it makes them feel better. But just as you mentioned with the officer being shot there, terrorists have strategic advantage. They choose when and where to attack. So you put a uniformed officer out there, either he's going to be the first one killed,
yep,
or they're going to wait for him to leave and then attack, or they'll attack another target. The point is they don't have enough soldiers, or they're not going to put out enough soldiers to cover all possible targets there. Israel learned this the hard way. For decades, they also tried that approach, putting more military, more police on the streets. But eventually they learned that they had, even no matter how much money they spent, if a terrorist was willing to be patient long enough, some opening would occur where they wouldn't be able to protect them. And so in early 70s, 72, they started allowing civilians to carry guns because that took away the strategic advantage that the terrorist has. A terrorist can be on a bus. Police can be there. The terrorist can wait for the police to leave. But he still doesn't know whether somebody in front of him or behind or the side might be able to stop him. So he doesn't know who he's supposed to shoot first.
And those attacks went down dramatically.
Yeah, well, the machine gun attacks basically disappeared at that point, and they moved to bombs. But they weren't as deadly, and there were other issues there, too. But look, you know, we're talking about a country like France or England or Canada or Australia where we've had these attacks where they don't even let off-duty police officers carry guns. You know, France has 200,000 police. At least if you let them carry off-duty, that would cover some targets.
Yeah.
There. You know, it's possible.
There'd be some policeman out to dinner with his wife,
right,
off-duty.
Or at the grocery store, yeah, where the attack occurred. Maybe he was shopping in the grocery store or something. It'd still only cover a tiny fraction of the possible targets, but at least it would be something, create some risk, some doubt in the criminal's mind. But, you know, I wish they would let some of the Jewish citizens carry guns with them, but
I told you that I'd seen stories that there are,
right,
Jewish groups in France right now who are asking for permission, not for everyone, but for at least some people, members of synagogues, Jewish rabbis and others, to be able to be trained and carry.
Yeah, and they're
so
laughed
they
off.
Them.
They're not even taken seriously in the discussion.
It sounds irrational.
Well, a lot of people, I think you would believe, also have an irrational fear of guns, and I think that's partly what's going on here.
And the other thing that I find irrational is the president keeps saying he's going to get new gun legislation. Now, he's been working at this for 6 years.
Right.
And he's had, as you and I think have agreed, the perfect storm. We've had some incidents that they could point to, famously Aurora, Sandy Hook, Clackamas Town Center, other shooting incidents, and say, see, that's why we need more rules. Your response to that is?
Well, I mean, he has put rules in through executive order, which,
yeah,
would be challenged in the courts. But look, the types of things that he's proposed, like these expanded background checks or other things, wouldn't have stopped any of the ones that he was pointing to. I mean, that's the amazing thing. I mean, even the former head of Bloomberg's groups was having to admit to the Wall Street Journal last year that, yeah, there was a bit of a disconnect between the proposals that they were putting forward and the tragedies that they were using to push those proposals. So, you know, I just, you know, whether it was the Manchin-Toomey bill or the initiative that's going to be in Oregon or the one that got passed in
Washington
State or these other ones that they're pushing, like in Nevada where we're at right now, you know, I just believe the main point of those initiatives is just to make it costly for people to own guns, their way to try to reduce gun ownership and make it easier for maybe in the future to push guns.
John, where can people access the information that you develop at the Crime Prevention Research Center?
Our website is crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org.
John, it's always a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for the work that you do,
Lance. Thank you very much. Live at the SHOT Show in Las Vegas, put on by the National Sports Shooting Foundation, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.